The Untitled Art Show. UntitledArtShow.com. The Untitled Art Show. The Untitled Art Show. Untitled Art Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Untitled Art Show. Today is Wednesday, September 30th, and we're streaming to you from Barefoot Radio Studio here in the heart of Denver's Art District on Santa Fe. I'm your host, Eric Isaac, and this is your co-host, Mike Keene. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I am fantastic. Thank you.
UntitledArtShow.com is where you can go for information on the show and listen to all of our past episodes. You can also podcast us on iTunes. Tonight, we'll be joined in studio by artist Jeff Page of Redline Gallery, Redline Studio. We'll have to ask him when he comes in.
I think it might actually just be Redline.
Redline.
That's enough.
I think there was another one. We will find out about that. Always an exciting place with very interesting artists. First, we'll pick up our discussion of where art is now. Wow. What's going on, Mike?
Where we left off last week with artist Nicholas Baldridge. How is that?
Sounds good.
So Nick Baldridge is an artist who is, he's one of Denver's up and coming, getting a lot of talk and press, and really talented guy. It was fun to dive in with him about his essentially self-taught experience as an artist.
Mm, yes, yes.
And this to me was really awesome because so many of, well, for me, I came up through art school. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts. And so for me, a lot of my education was aimed at steering me into the artist that I am now, but he took a totally different route, though he is studying, he's not studying art in particular, and just sort of picked up the same books that his friends who were in art schools were utilizing and just started reading and drawing. And I think that's really exciting because anything that is filtered through the lens of any institution is going to have behind it those types of their mentality, their general outlook. There tends to be a grouping together of ideas that just naturally comes out through any group working together. And so he's sort of stepped around that, and I think through that chosen to really push himself in ways that are really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And
it seems like there's not a lot of people who are halfway, who had an education and then did a lot of self-study, stuff like that. It seems like either you were completely on your own or were in a really amazing program. At the Food Collective Plus Gallery, which I'm the owner and director of, we have a new intern, and she, Julia, she has an amazing... She went to one of the art high schools... where you actually have to like apply for it, and you have to have a portfolio. And she's had as many shows, like group shows and coffee shop shows, and so forth and so on, that I had when I started off. I mean, this is all being pushed from high school,
which
is just amazing to me. It's like whether you self learn or learn from school, it seems like the most important thing to learn is that drive and just. You can't beat the experience of a show, of putting together a show, of actually making the things.
Well, and that to me, what I experienced, I was lucky in high school to have a really incredible group of mentors and teachers working with me. And that was the same thing I took away from it was no one is going to do this for you except for you. If you have an interesting idea, it's not enough to talk about it with your friends. You have to execute it or it's essentially valueless. And that to me is something that we're seeing in a lot of the artists. You know, we see a lot of installation artists and we see a lot of really avant-garde artists. We were talking earlier today about Justin Stewart's work. And, you know, one of these guys who's taking really complex systems and then giving them a visual representation, for instance, the traffic structure.
Mm-hmm.
Was at Minneapolis? Anyhow, the idea being that we're taking cool ideas and then actually giving it a real-world manifestation. And that drive that you talk about that your new intern has found and other artists have found is, I think, the baseline for all of it. If you don't have the energy and the passion and the intensity, then what else will happen?
Yeah, the only thing that really goes along with that is having the endurance to continue. It has to be, you have to have some sort of reward that balances out the energy expended. We here in Denver's Art District on Santa Fe live and die off of the First Friday event. As far as I know, it's probably the most... populous of First Fridays in the entire region, just the thousands of people that come down, and it's created this amazing cycle down here where everybody, the 40 or so galleries here are completely out of sync. It's like everybody does whatever they want, whenever they want, however they want, but we somehow all come together on First Friday. And prepping for those shows, if you're on top of it, it's great and fun and everything like that. But for me, this week has been anything but that experience.
I'll be hanging my show tomorrow night, which is always, you know, for an opening on Friday, Thursday night at 9 p.m. is definitely the wrong time to be hanging.
Mm. That's one of those secrets that probably are best just for the just for the loyal followers of the show. Yeah, it's amazing. And then again, though, it's like what we were talking about with experience, where it's just I never thought I would be so good at like hanging shows. It's one of those things. I mean, there couldn't be that many schools that, you know, like curator school, I think there's one that I know of, or there's like specialties, but it's like I never thought in my life I would have hung so many paintings.
Whereas I always knew. I looked myself in the mirror as a child and said, you look like a guy who's gonna hang some paintings.
And again, it's that experience thing. It's like you just learn. I mean, you learn what looks good and what doesn't, and it's like if it doesn't look good, you have to rehang it. And just that drive. And again, if it's balanced with the good reward, you can just keep going. But
absolutely,
you just have to have a long-term vision on this type of thing. Cause it's like, if you're looking for short-term goals, it's or short-term reward type of thing, it's not gonna be enough for you.
But the rewards are rich. I mean, for me, the interactions with my artists, the artists that I represent, and with the community at large is what makes all of this worthwhile. I loved being a studio artist, but I also really enjoy the curatorial aspect of my current phase in this career. And that to me is so cool because as an artist, I've always had this weird superstitious feeling that I can only produce so much art or I'll kind of use it up as if it was this finite thing. Mm-hmm. I know that's crazy, but I've had that sense. So anything that I can do that keeps me involved in the arts as an entire community and industry and all of these things, but isn't necessarily directly brush on canvas or whatever version of creation I'm doing at the moment, feels like it's working in those directions without utilizing my finite storage of creativity. That's really sad. I know, it's weird.
You know, for me, it's in this last year, I've switched entirely to installation art. And it's great. I love putting it up. It's some of the best conceptual art that I've ever done. The reactions and interactions with people have been perfect. But the thing that I'm learning now is the difficulty of taking it down. It would be like doing a painting and then meticulously painting over your lines in white and just like tearing the whole thing down. I mean, it's this traumatic.
That's actually a good idea.
You learn a lot from it, but it's like some lessons are just like, do I really want to be learning this lesson of life and death and the cycle of everything? And we will actually learn more about those cycles of installation when we talk with our guest tonight, Jeff Page, who currently has a installation up at Redline. But before we take our break, I'd like to thank our sponsor for this segment, which is Studio 6 Coffee House, located in the 910 Arts Building at 910 Santa Fe Drive. And while you're getting your coffee, stop by Gallery Cuvée, a contemporary art gallery right across the hall. For information, visit studio6coffee.com and gallerycuvée.com. We'll be right back.
Untitled Art Show. Untitled Art Show. Untitled Art Show. UntitledArtShow.com.
Do you enjoy the Untitled Art Show? If so, you can help grow the show's listenership by rating and subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. You're asking, what? How and when do I do that? I'll tell you. Go straight to UntitledArtShow.com and click on the iTunes link. If you have iTunes installed, clicking on the link will take you straight to our page in the iTunes podcast directory. Here you can rate and subscribe to the show. Your rating will help bring attention to hardworking artists, and maybe we'll get featured in the directory. Thank you for listening, and please tell your friends about UntitledArtShow.com.
Falling down ain't easy, but it takes your mind off that old crutch. This world may be crazy, it was never meant to hold this much, to hold this much, to hold this much, to hold this much. Sing a song for Jesus, sing a song for Satan, and one for me. I'm caught in the middle of a deep and dark hypocrisy, 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 hypocrisy. There's a brave new world coming, but you'll never see it on TV. Don't you rock that boat now, 'cause that would rock the world, and that can't be, well, that can't be, that can't be. To speak for what you feel, or the dogs of guilt will get you, and they will cut a hole that will not heal. It will not heal. It will not heal. It will not heal. But it takes your mind off that old crutch. This world may be crazy, it was never meant to hold this much, to hold this much, to hold this much, to hold this much.
Welcome back. This is the Untitled Art Show. We're joined tonight by artist Jeff Page. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hello, world. My name is Jeff Page. Always going to do that.
We created a monster by warning Jeff before the show that the closer to the mic you get, the more radio air.
How radio do I sound?
Wow.
I knew you looked too happy when you sat down.
Oh, yeah, you have no idea.
We need to get a better vetting process.
You never know what you're going to get from the Redline artist. No. So is it Redline? Is it just Redline?
Yeah, it's just Redline. Sometimes I say Redline Contemporary Art Space so people know exactly what it is. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, before we go into learning a little more about that, why don't you tell us about the installation that you have up at Redline right now?
Okay. So the installation is called An Intention of Design, An Infliction of the Mind. And it is basically a little room that I built in the corner of the space. And there's a big hole cut out. And on one side of the room, from the exterior view, there's just all this debris and this just really janky pile of crap, just all kinds of materials. There's like a ladder and books stacked up and boxes and paper and just a bunch of junk on the side of this building, this little room that I built. And you can actually walk inside the room and you'll see I basically made like a little, it was originally going to be a bedroom, but I couldn't figure out how to do the bed, which ended up being okay. But I had this plan for how I was going to do the walls. I painted the walls with this faux finishing tool that I have. These really vibrant colors. The whole inside really looks kind of cartoony. And I painted the floor as well. And then there's a little table that I painted also, this like kind of cartoony faux wood finish, and a lamp and the lampshade, and the floor is kind of interacting with the light of the lamp. And there's a window in the room, and when you look through the window, you see this kind of little diorama, which is basically what all the junk outside of the building is holding up and into place in this very like delicate kind of frantic way, if that makes any sense. So I guess I'll just stop there, and then you can like, wow, this guy is totally high right now.
No,
like, that's just my art.
Well, basically, Eric is going to head down later this week and check it out. But my first impressions from seeing this installation, for one, you can step inside of it and interact directly with the art. But it was really cool for me as I experienced the work to then hear a lot of my thoughts looking at it reflected in our conversation after the fact. And for me, I took a lot of elements where the pile of debris felt very much like the disaster culture that we've built up around us, where everything occurs in this crisis mode, and then we do these crazy patches that feel as if they're solutions, but so clearly cannot be. And that felt really cool to me to look at. I could see greenery from the one side, and then I flip around to the other, and it's just paint buckets and National Geographic magazines, which was a really cool element, and just all of this stuff. And that, to me, when I get inside and look around and see the juvenile, very primitive painting style that you took on for this, I think is awesome, because it puts a lot of attention on where we put attention. You know, we put so much emphasis on our homes and creating these McMansions and all of this, and this is just awesome.
Absolutely. I like the idea that you approached the room from the outside first, seeing it from that infrastructure level. It's definitely something that I like. Yeah. You can see we have a whole gallery up on our website of untitledartshow.com. And also then, what is your personal website?
JeffPageStudio.com.
JeffPageStudio.com. And that's where we can like actually go back and see some of your past works and other installations as well. So tell us a little bit about the process. I mean, maybe even starting off with what is it that you do art for? What is the reason for these installations?
Well, it's been a long journey for me as an artist. I didn't really know what I was doing or why I was doing it. I just know I like to create things. But I've really decided, I've kind of really made up my mind about what role art plays in my life, and that is, one, it's a thing that I do for fun, but two, I've really decided that it's actually about intellectual pursuit. I like to explore ideas that I have and ideas that other people have that intrigue me, and so that's what it's really about for me. And that part, a lot of the fun comes out of that, but sometimes I like to just, that's kind of where my collage work comes in, because that for me is very just it's really fun. It's pure fun. It's conceptual too, but not as much as the installation work that I've done. So
this is the theme I'm hearing a lot, where artists are pushing more into the intellect, and we're really chasing down an idea to its natural evolution. Is that something that you intentionally started doing, or did this just occur as an aspect of your personal interest?
I think it's just like kind of part of who I am. I like to deconstruct things and stuff, but I think it's also, you know, I think that we're surrounded by so much artificial crap all the time that it's like, I think we all kind of have this desire for like a truer, knowing what something really is. We want to see the truth of something, because so many things in this world are not what they seem at all. And so that's what I think that's what intrigues me about art.
Interesting. So what kind of reactions have you had to this particular piece?
It's been pretty mixed, but that's okay, because the people that know me, you know, I mean, well, contemporary art isn't for everyone. There's a lot of people that aren't really that into it, and they look at that and they look at my piece and might think, God, this is so weird. I don't know how to react to this. And then other people, some of my mentors have said, this is a really this is a leap forward for you. And, you know, those are the people that I'm really listening to. I'm listening to the other people too, just because I'm curious what other people see in it.
You know, that interaction of someone saying that they don't necessarily get something, and often they're a little mad about it, to me is actually a worthwhile expression of their feelings, that you've still won something out of them,
right?
Even if it wasn't positive.
Right, yeah.
And I think when you start talking about mentors, that's a, for me at least, this is a really sticky thing, because I always want to have people above me whose careers are more established, who can give me their insight, yet I don't want to follow their career. How do you balance that action between having mentors provide information but not necessarily just steering you into whatever?
I guess it's just about, I mean, just knowing, just really figuring out who you respect and who you know, there, I mean, because I can name 10 artists who are like really well established and I like their work, but I may not really value their opinion as much as you know, some other established artists or some not so established artists. So it's just, you're constantly having to figure out, you know, okay, this person I don't really like personally, but wow, I really want him to come to my show because I really respect this guy's perspective or this woman's perspective on my, you know, not really thinking of anyone in particular, but I know that does happen.
So I'm curious to see, to hear what you have to say about the process of this. You mentioned that, like, you originally intended it to be a bedroom, but then the bed didn't work out. Tell us a little bit about how much you had this planned out to begin with, and what happened through the process of creating it.
Yeah, that's always, I feel like that's one of the best parts of every project is having your plans go wrong. You know, it's like, it's the worst, but it's also the best because you learn, you learn so much through that. That's the process. You know, it's the whole journey. The journey is a destination thing. That's, you know, so when I was stuck and I was like, what am I going to do? This bed is not working. I spent like two nights actually painting these bed sheets and they looked like crap and it just didn't work. And I was talking to people and I talked to Virginia Folkstead. She's one of the other artists at Redline. And I would say she's one of my mentors. She is great. Yeah. And she knew, she just looked at me. She's like, she's like, you don't like the bed, do you? I was like, no. And she's like, yeah, I knew it wasn't going to work for you. And so we just talked about it, and that's often how I figure out what I should do, is just by talking to other artists and bouncing ideas off there.
So you have a, the Red Line is a studio of, is it about 10 artists? How many artists are actually?
There's about, it's like, I don't know, it's like 12 or something. And then there's like the kind of mentoring artists in the back. But there's like about 10 or 12 resident artists.
And how long have you been involved with them?
Redline opened July of last year and we all moved in right then.
Oh, so you're one of the original.
Mm-hmm.
That's so tell us a little bit about the experience of working in a group like that.
It's been awesome. It's been the push that I needed, that my work needed. The best part about it is the camaraderie with the other artists and being around like-minded artists, because the two studios I was in prior to Redline, I loved the people that I was surrounded with, but that camaraderie wasn't there. I didn't feel like I was around like-minded artists. I feel like at Redline, people get my work and I get their work, or maybe I don't get it, but I pick their brains and I want to know about it. And there's just really intense, awesome dialogue going on all the time. It's something that it's kind of unfortunate, because I feel like it's such a special experience to be a part of, but it's one that not many artists get, and I feel like every artist needs to have an experience like that.
You know, for us, that was actually a big motivation for starting this show, is that we kept feeling like we had this same community around us, and people would come through and interact for a short while and say, oh man, you're so lucky to be able to just pick somebody's brain. And it's kind of got Eric thinking this was all his decision, but it was definitely one of these things where that to me is the single biggest reason to incorporate yourself in an artistic community.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the point?
You know?
You pay higher rent and all these things, and you know.
Yeah, I have to say, you guys, like, thank you so much for starting this podcast, because when I first found out about it, I was like, oh, this is so what Denver needs, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I just think it's so good for the community, and it you know, just it's dialogue.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
we love hearing that.
I'm glad we got that on tape. I'm going to make a loop of that for.
Yeah, Michael, can I get my hot tea now?
Yeah.
what do you think the success of Redline is? Because I know that seeing different galleries and studio spaces and stuff like that, it's so difficult to achieve that element that you were talking about, that like-minded, the community. What do you think it is about Redline that succeeded in creating that?
Well, the space is incredible. Mm-hmm. So it's so inspiring to be in there. And it's, you know, it just, I think it's, I don't know, it's the energy that each and every one of the individuals in there has put into it. It's like, it really is just a community effort. That's why it's great, is because we've all kind of stepped forward and, you know, we all knock in each other's studio and like, it's great. I don't know how else to answer that.
Yeah. You know, it is a very difficult, I guess if it was easy to, answer that question, there'd be a lot more spaces like it. So, I'd like to go back and talk a little bit about the first piece of your work that I was ever introduced to was, I think it was the last installation. That was the rubber band cardboard. Was it cardboard?
Yeah, it was corrugated cardboard.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that one and the evolution of how that happened.
So we at Redline, we started a kind of sideline exhibition series called Green Dot, kind of like Redline Green Dot. And because there are so many great peripheral spaces at Redline, and we were like, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't have art constantly up in these areas and having little mini exhibitions there. So we started this series, and we started doing it where people would they started off as collaborative exhibitions. And so I approached Virginia Folkstead, and we decided to work on something together. And it started off, we would meet for coffee before I went to work every morning, like a couple times. And we just sat there and we're like, what do we, you know, we had some ideas mapped out, but we didn't know what material to work with. And I had done the first installation I'd ever done when I was in art school. There was a section of the installation that I did this crazy net of rubber bands. And I remember when I did it, I was just, I loved it. I loved the way it looked. They were really easy to work with. They were cheap. And I knew eventually I wanted to do something else with it. So I told her about it and she was like, yeah, let's go for that. So $500 worth of rubber bands later, so much for a cheap project.
Wow.
Because we just, you know, that's the thing with installation. You have to fill a big space, you know, especially at Redline. So we went at it and we created this really organic kind of viral looking organism in the space. And we kind of created like a fake art show. We actually borrowed paintings from three of the artists at Redline, and we asked them, we said, you know, can we hang your art for this art show? And they're like, isn't it your art show? And we're like, yeah, well, our art is going to be attacking your art.
I was wondering about that, because I remember that, because this was a progressional piece, correct?
Yeah.
It started off just sort of like a little blob in the corner, and it spread.
Yeah.
Shockingly, it spread a lot further than I thought, because didn't it, at the end of it, it took up the main gallery, correct?
Yeah, it crawled out. It kind of creeped along the ceiling into the middle of the main exhibition space, and then it dropped down to the floor, all the way down to the floor, up till about, like, I don't know, 6 inches off the floor.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. What I think was one of the surprising elements of that was the smell to it. It had those rubber bands had such a strong. No, I mean,
it makes sense.
It was. Like opening up, it's like if you open up a box or a bag of rubber bands and like stuff your face in it. I mean, it was pretty powerful, and it makes sense. I mean, I couldn't even imagine how many. $500 worth of rubber bands must have been
a lot.
Do you know the number?
We counted. It was 60 pounds of rubber bands.
How many rubber bands to a pound?
I don't know.
There's a conversion unit on the
end. Yeah, yeah. I'll get back to you on that.
I'll talk to my assistant later tonight, and she'll get back to me.
It's a Mike Keen Google moment for that one. Yes. Get back to us on that one.
You have to convert it via stone to rubber band.
So tell us a little bit about the collaborative process for this piece.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I have to say, I hope Virginia feels the same way, because I loved it. It was really fun. And that's not always, you know, that's not always the case with collaboration, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, between two artists. but I learned a lot from her, and she was just really easygoing, and we worked really well, because I'm more kind of intuitive. I think things out, but I need to do it, and I need to like do it and then look at it and, you know, and talk about it, whereas she thought things out a little bit more. So it was cool, because I would get on the scissor lift and I would grab a bunch of rubber bands and I would start like tying them up, and she would kind of direct me. She'd be like, all right, we need more density over here. And it was fun. We really worked well together. It was really fun. And I hope that I have another collaborative experience like that. It couldn't have been better. It was really good.
Do you feel like that collaboration and the experiences of that are shaping your current project, this current installation?
It's working with her. I learned a little bit, you know, you learn a little bit from each project, and every installation I've done, I've gotten more and more confident with it. Because when I first did it, my first installation, I was terrified. So terrified. I almost didn't even finish it because I was so scared of what people were going to think. but I pushed through and I finished it, and I loved it, and I learned a lot. And it's gotten easier every time. And now I feel like I'm becoming a pro at it. I really feel like I'm getting good at it.
So the current one that you have up now, the house, or the room, I mm-hmm. guess is what it is. This one isn't a growing installation. This one is completed.
Yeah. It's done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it'll be up until November 13th or November 6th, I think.
Unless Eric's boxes move in. and take over the structure. Because his installation wants to fight your installation.
Uh-oh.
Mine's almost the exterior.
Game on. Bring it on.
Well, I think that would be a good conclusion, is to actually have the two to do a dual installation where they're fighting.
Yeah.
And to have just like the progression of like how they slow.
Yeah, I like that.
Or find out that both are transformable into robots. I don't know.
Completing the whole concept for how it went from the rubber band installation. These were consecutive, correct? These mm-hmm. are the two ones.
Yeah.
And how was the reception of the rubber bands? How did people react to that as it progressed throughout the gallery?
That people really, it was cool. People really enjoyed watching the growth. Because it really, week by week, there was always something new, you know, like all of a sudden the installation came around the corner and shot up to the ceiling and crawled up into the skylight, and people really responded positively to that.
How long was that up for?
That was up for 2 months.
2 months? Mm-hmm. And so you added on to it on a regular basis?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what was sort of the process from, I mean, sort of wrapping that one up? Before we go on to break, we have just a minute or two. Tell me a little bit about the process of taking that one down. Mm-hmm. Because I know that I've been having problems with taking an installation down.
Yeah.
How do you take an installation down?
I mean, it all depends on the material. Like this one was, I thought it was going to be a pain, but it was actually really easy. I mean, you just had to walk around with scissors and cut the rubber bands off. And it was actually really... I know you talked about kind of the life and death of a piece of art, but it was actually cool because when I cut it down, there was this mass on the floor and it kind of became something else. And now all of those materials are piled up in my studio in this big ball, and it's now this like has this other life. It's like the bacteria or whatever we created is still living and like... But I know what you mean about how... Because I've had experiences with other installations that it's like... a pain in the butt, and it's kind of heartbreaking, and it disappears.
So are you collecting a slow pile of previous installations that are now in pile form?
Oh yeah, I still have. I have a box full of these like blue brick things that I made like I don't know 5 years ago or something, and I'm still. I actually kind of want to use them in another installation, but part of me is just like, dude, just throw them away.
Because I have a small pile of every installation that I've done.
I know.
Maybe we should do a group show where it just consists of
we
piles
should have
of
an installation material swap.
Or they could fight.
Wow, it's just a fighting mood today. Okay, well, we will come back after a break to learn a little more history of our guest tonight, Jeff Page. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor for this segment, which is the Foo Collective Plus Gallery, located at 810 West 8th Avenue, featuring contemporary art of emerging and local artists. Open Fridays 1 to 9. FooCollective.com for more information. We will be right back.
Untitled Art Show, a classy podcast about art. Untitled Art Show. UntitledArtShow.com.
Hot damn, I know who I am, but I'm willing to be reintroduced. And I'll make my stand, surrender in hand, get the phone, man, we're calling a truce. When I stepped inside this carnival ride, man said, hey, you stay to the end. No end in sight, if my gut was right, I'd be 6 feet under by then. Dig me 6 feet under by then. Oh, brave little darling, please understand. Brave little darling, please wait for your man. I don't really care to slick back my hair and get me a little respect. Tuck in my shirt till the tails hit the dirt. Yeah, it don't seem to have much effect. My girl said to me, I got something that's free. It's just me and my brand new shop. Yeah, there's nothing there but two folding chairs. We just sit around and talk. Can we just sit down and talk?
Welcome back. This is the Untitled Art Show. In studio tonight, Jeff Page. So when we left off, we were talking about your current work and so forth and so on. So I'd like to delve back a little bit and sort of get the history of how you got started in the arts and what happened from the beginning to your current installation work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. I got started in... I fell in love with photography in high school, and I was also a creative writing major, and so I went to school for creative writing, and I hated that, and then I was like, all right, I'm really going to do photography. So I went to the San Francisco Art Institute and studied photography, and right before I graduated, I was taking all these elective courses, and I realized I hated photography. And
that's
because
awesome.
They kind of forced you at that school. They forced you to like really branch out and try everything. And when I did that, I realized I changed my major to interdisciplinary studies. And it's interesting. The first, even now still, a lot of what I did and a lot of what I do now is sort of about how, it's about how false photography is, or about the image is, or the mediated image is. And not that I'm not bad mouthing photography or video or anything like that. I'm just saying, I don't know, for me, I needed a more hands-on, experience with making art. The dark room it was like shooting me in the head. I hated going in the dark room. And I mean, now, of course, with digital, it's not really, I don't know, like that. But
I'm curious about that. You said the false image of photography. Explain that a little more.
Well, the first installation I ever did was about, it was about looking at the landscape through a car and how the automobile has shaped so much of like our lives and the way that we view nature and the landscape and everything. And so it was all, this installation was about, actually on the door to go into the gallery was a picture of this like blurry landscape photo taken from inside of a car. And then you go inside and it was sort of about finding a deeper truth, finding another way of expressing what that image was. So it was like, I became really obsessed with that, like finding a more accurate representation of what photography tries to do. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. You know, Rick Sargent and I were actually talking about this the other day because I got really fascinated momentarily with the Mandelbrot sets and fractal equations and all of these things. And he's saying, okay, well, the fractals are part of the description, but what's the idea underneath it? They're the mathematic language defining what we're talking about, but what's the idea underneath? And that seems to me a little bit like what you're trying to say. You're searching for the ideas that are beneath the symbol sets and the things that we put up.
Right.
You know, and photography is such an interesting thing because it was sort of stumbled upon and then given this immense power because it's saying, no, that's real. It's a photograph, which is, you know, even back in the early days, so much manipulation was available.
Right.
So how do you see your work intentionally chasing that now? Is it still an aspect of your pursuit?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. It is. I still kind of think of things in that way, what I just described with that image and looking for a more accurate representation. It's like what I said earlier in the interview about how things are just not what they seem, you know, in this world that we live in. It's like you grow up and you realize, God, things are just so complicated. There's so many layers to things. And, you know, a landscape isn't just a landscape. It's also, you know, just the little tree in the middle of a Kmart parking lot, like that was planted there. That was planned. That's like a calculated version of nature. You know, like I started looking at things in that way. And a lot of photographers look at things in that way too. And I'm not saying that photography is, you know, not a valid art form or something. It just, I don't know. I became more drawn to like really getting my hands in my art, and that's why I like collage too, because it's about cutting up images with my hands.
And so is that the direction that you went to first? Tell us a little bit about your collage background and sort of what happened from photography. Where did you go from there?
Yeah, I did. The first installation I did was all of photographs that I had cut up. It was these blue bricks that I was talking about earlier. I took hundreds of pictures of the sky, and then I cut them up and I made them into these just kind of pictures of bricks. They were these blue bricks, and then it's on my website, and the project was called Skybound. So it was an installation, and it was where I really just started assaulting the photograph and using it in a different way. And then that, from there, I jumped right into collage. I was like, oh, this is collage. So I've been doing collage ever since then.
And collage is a funny art form because you are utilizing other people's imagery and reinterpreting it through your particular lens. And it's exciting because a lot of the decisions are made for you, but then you're given a lot of control. What was your first project in collage? What was your breakthrough moment with that?
Well, I did a show in San Francisco, and it was, I started using the paper as paint almost, and then also using the imagery as well, kind of interacting with these strokes of paint that were actually paper. And that was the first time I really took off in that direction with collage. And I just want to say, too, that I have a collage show up right now in Boulder at Nalanda Gallery, which is on the campus of Naropa University. And the closing reception is this Friday. It's from like 6 to 9. So all that's on my website, too.
Excellent.
You mentioned earlier that the first installation was one of these ones, the blue brick or the photography one. Was that the first one you were talking about? Because you said earlier that the first installation that you did, you almost didn't complete it. You didn't have that confidence in it.
That was the blue brick one was actually the second one. The first one I did, that was the one about the like car landscape thing that I was talking about.
And what was the element or what was the component of that let you complete that one? And what type of reaction did you get from it?
People really responded to how much effort I had put into it, and it was okay. But if I hadn't done it, I wouldn't be doing installation today. Like you gotta go for it from day one. So. What was your question?
That was the question.
You know, that just reminded me of my favorite thing that happens frequently in galleries, especially new ones, where people walk in and their eyes scan right over the art and then they compliment the building. And I love how in that the compliment they had for you was, oh, wow, you really put a lot of effort into this.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, like we were talking about at the beginning, you know, it's like that's really – it's like it's good to have at least that part complimented. I mean, that's really what it takes. Tell us a little bit about the show that you have up. I didn't realize that there is your collage show up. Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm actually really, really excited about it because it's a lot of work. It's about – I don't know, it's like 15, 18 pieces, something like that. And it's called Fortune Revised, and it is it's the first time I've ever taken 8x10, these 8x10 collages that I did, and I scanned them at really high resolution and I blew them up and I printed them, which I always resisted because I just thought it would totally just negate all the work that I put into it. And I love things that are handmade, but you know what? They look awesome. And blowing them up that big, you can tell they were handmade even more because you can see all the lines that I've cut, and they deserve to be that big. And so I'm showing about half of them are these like 24 by 36 big bright collages. And then the other half are these like 16 by 16 inch, just straight up collages, not digitally printed, in frames. And it's kind of, I don't want to like give my process away too much or give my idea behind it too much, because I want people to think what they want to think. But I sort of thought of them as like a new version of tarot cards. That on my website you'll see it's the images are listed out as proposed tarot updates. So.
Which I've always kind of wanted to be assigned as a project. But you know,
oh, yeah. I would love that. So, I thought about doing like a fake tarot reading at the closing reception. I thought that would be really funny. If I like set up a little table and I had all these fake cards that were like my collages out, and I'd sit people down and tell them some like ridiculous things about their lives. Like,
so where do the ideas come from? It's like you really seem to be in your collage and installation work based on these intellectual ideas and the intellectual pursuit of these things. How do you generate the idea? How do you know what you're going to do next? How do you choose what the project is going to be?
Sometimes I get the idea first, like, oh, I want to make something that addresses this issue or idea. Or sometimes, like, I'll just see, you know, like with the rubber bands. Well, actually, the idea came first, but sometimes I respond to the material, and then I'm like, oh, what could I do with this material? It's so cool, you know, there's potential there to, like, make it into something else to, you know, and then I kind of discover the idea that I'm pursuing through that. So it's always just either the material or the idea first, and one thing leads to the other, you know. It just kind of goes back and forth.
Can I take us back a question to your systemic installation?
Uh-huh.
Kind of random, mm-hmm. but... I wanted to hear, how did the viewers respond to the attack of the art on the other art pieces? Mm. Did that, yeah, tell me about that a little.
Yeah, people thought it was really funny. And it was cool seeing how the artists who had made the art that we were kind of attacking with this systemic, you know, installation that was crawling on the walls and crawling over their paintings and stuff. And it was cool seeing their reaction. They loved it. They were like, oh, this is, you know, this is great. It just like makes me think about all these things about, you know, a comment on the art world and about art spaces and galleries and just like these external forces coming in and like just attacking the art. It was cool. People really responded to it in a positive way. I think they got it. I felt like.
So that's one thing that I think a lot of the general public don't realize is just how much is going on behind the scenes in any institution right. or studio space. And, you know, because really the orchestration of any show is an installation with modular pieces possibly coming from multiple artists. But there's mm-hmm. always this crazy connectivity between the people and the art and how mm-hmm. everything's interacting together. Is that something that your interactions at Redline have brought more into focus for you? Because you said this is really your first, I mean, it's your third studio space, but your first real community experience with that. Mm-hmm. Is that changing the way you work, or are you just kind of, it's just part of your backdrop?
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, I think a few of us at Redline have said this, that I don't think I can go back to being in a lonely studio environment. You know, now I can't do it. I've been spoiled, and I see the benefits of all the interactions and the, you know, the strength of the community. And I can't go back.
Which is awkward because it's just a few year run, right?
Yeah, I've only got 1 year left. So I'm gonna make the most of it.
Maybe you'll be the one to set precedence for pushing it into longer. I don't know.
Yeah.
the term limit. Tell us a little bit about where you're going to be going from here.
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously no one's going to buy this great, awesome installation art that I made last week. but I don't care. I just want to find bigger, greater venues to show in the region and beyond. So I'm kind of looking forward to see what that's going to look like. I know there's a lot of frustration with a lot of installation artists in Denver because there aren't a lot of alternative spaces in Denver that welcome, welcome art that they can't sell in big installation projects. I mean, there's plenty of spaces that do, but I think we could use some more mm-hmm. alternative art spaces. And I'll be keeping up with my collage too, which that can be shown in a lot of places here. But I'm definitely going to be looking for bigger, more impressive spaces to show.
How does that affect, because of the nature of the this conceptual installation art, how does that affect what you do? It doesn't sound like it's going to keep you from doing it, but how much, I mean, does it change the type of shows you do, the type of work that you do?
You mean not having a space to do it?
Well,
the
idea that it's installation art is just to be shown. Mm-hmm. It's not. It can't follow that traditional model of, you know, a sale that goes with it.
Right.
So how does that affect? How much does that affect you and what you do?
Yeah, it affects. I mean, you know, it's all about whether or not I have enough money to do it. I mean, for this project, I was telling Michael the other day that it's pretty cool the way it worked out, because I called my brother-in-law and I'm like, I've got this great idea, you know, but I don't have the money to do it. And like, you know, and he's a general contractor. So I was like, you know, how could I do this in a cheaper way? And he's like, listen, you update my website. I'm a web designer. He's like, update my website and then we'll take a trip to Home Depot and I'll work it out. So it was the greatest trade I've ever done. And he built the thing for me, bought the materials, and it was a perfect trade. But yeah, so money is, it's always just whether or not I have enough money to do it, because I know I'm not going to make it back.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that, because that's one of the things that I've discovered doing installation art, is that each one is a different, I mean, you can't master these type of things. What has it been like? What's your experience with coming up with an idea and then learning how to do it?
Yeah. You mean like, how do I go about learning how to do
it? Yeah.
Like, yeah. Cause I'm always working with different materials and stuff. And so it's always a challenge, cause it's not like paint, you know, I'm not a painter. It's not the same material over and over. It's different all the time. Like rubber bands. Like I didn't know that I didn't know all the things I know now about rubber bands. You know, I had to learn that. Is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That's why installation is just so challenging, because you spend so much time putting it together and installing it, and you're on these deadlines, and then it's done, and then you have to tear it down, and it's gone.
And now your studio is full of rubber bands.
And then your studio is full of junk. And it's not like you have, you know, it's not like a painting or a collage where you can just work on it over time and put it up on the wall and look at it. And it's like, you have 2 days to install it and it has to be done, and you're working with new materials that you don't have a lot of experience with.
But that to me is actually really exciting though, because it's recognizing a basic truth that our hands are just tools, everything we utilize just another tool.
It is. It's very exciting.
And so is it worth it? I mean, it sounds like you're continuing.
Yeah,
so.
I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. I mean, I know you're loving it too, because I've been listening to your podcast and you're nutso about installation. So.
Oh, I didn't realize it was coming through so much. So do you have an idea that do you have we're just about out of time. Do you have a specific idea or concept that you're going to be working with for your next installation?
I don't know. I'm kind of, I might be done for the year, because this summer was so crazy, and it's been, I don't know, one show after the next, which has been
absolutely
awesome. But I mean, I'm sure come November, I'm going to be like itching to get something going. So it's all just about finding the next space that I'm going to do it in.
Fantastic. So, and the best way to keep up with you is at your website?
Yeah, jeffpagestudio.com.
Okay, fantastic. So we're just about out of time. Thank you for being on the show. It was some fantastic insight to the world of installation art and collage and so forth. So, you can find links to everything that we talked about from our website, untitledartshow.com. And from there, you can also listen to all of our past episodes.
Our featured music this week came from Michael Miranda, performing Crutch at michaelmiranda.com. Also, Dave Boutte, performing Brave Little Darling at myspace.com/DaveBoutteMusic.
I'd like to thank audio producer Paul and Barefoot Radio Studios. We will see you all next week.
Only once a month. Well, I came home one morning here, soon came up. Now, where were you tonight?
The Untitled Art Show. UntitledArtShow.com. The Untitled Art Show. The Untitled Art Show. Untitled Art Show. Untitled Art Show is recorded by Barefoot Radio and includes license-free music by Kevin MacLeod.
Yeah.